Suvas Perek Zayin Mishnah Ches 7-8. In the previous Mishnah, we discussed the topic of mumen, blemishes, which a typical person would object to in his wife, and therefore, if he didn't know they were there, there's potentially grounds for divorce, and that a claim could be made for mekach taos, that he was misled and entered into the Kedushin arrangement under false pretenses, and therefore it shouldn't be binding in the first place. Now we said, in the case of a mekach taos claim, the results will be that number one, he still has to give her a get because it's a suffix. We're not certain that it wasn't effective, and therefore we give a get out of suffix, because suffix derives the chumrah. But also, we say that he won't need to pay her ksuba, because we'll say the burden of proof is now on her. We're not sure if it was binding or not. He's claiming it wasn't binding, and that being the case, we are going to require her to bring some proof that he had agreed to it or something like that. Otherwise, she won't be able to collect the ksuba. Now, in our Mishnah, the topic is, we're talking about a certain mumen which potentially came into being after Kedushin, but we're not sure. So certainly we're not talking about someone like having six fingers, right? So if a woman had six fingers, that's one of the mumen that are invalidated a Kohen, and therefore invalidate a woman. And therefore, if he was misled and she had six fingers and he didn't know about it, so of course, we're talking there as a case of mekach tos, unless she can show that he knew about it and agreed to it. But other things, like for example, that her voice is very deep, like disturbingly deep, or that she has a very bad breath or some other body odor. So that could have come only through adolescence, and very possibly when he did the kedushin stage and she became an arusa, that hadn't happened yet. She still hadn't developed that mum, but later on it did. Now, the case of our Mishnah is that the father of the bride and the husband of the bride are having a tug-of-war over whether or not the ksuba should be paid. The father, so therefore talking about a case where the girl is a minor or at most a nara, so he has a claim to get the ksuba payment. So he's saying when the kedushin happened, the mumen question had not yet appeared, and therefore the marriage is binding, it's not a mekach tos. And then, as the Mishnah describes it, v'nistachafa sadehu, his field got flooded, meaning the thing he acquired with Kedushin, his wife, got messed up after the fact. That's nature running its course and not anyone's fault. And therefore, the husband has to, if he's going to divorce the girl, has to pay the ksuba. On the other side, we have the husband who's saying, no, I don't know about that. I bet you tricked me, and this really came into place, this mum, her voice or her breath, whatever the story is, developed, and you just hid it from me. It happened before the erison, and therefore it's a mekach tos, and you can have your daughter back, but I'm not paying ksuba. So there's a fight over the ksuba payment. So our mission is discussing that. Now, just a few important points of background. Number one, I mentioned this before, but I want to mention it again. There's a machlokas amoraim, whether there's any ksuva payment at all if a woman never gets to the stage of nisuin and she moves in with the husband. Our Mishnah, like all the Mishnahs we've seen up to now, seem to suggest that the ksuva payment would be, in fact, payable even if the marriage had made it to nisuin. In our case here, for example, the husband discovered after the erison but before the nisuin. Now, according to the shitas that say there is a ksuba payment even after erison and even before nisuin, so everything is going to make perfect sense and read smoothly. If not, so we'll have to say that the case of our Mishnah is, like we saw previously and earlier on the Masechta, that the husband explicitly said that the ksuba will be payable even if he breaks it off or dies prior to the nisuin. Okay, so that'll be the case. The halacha is, in fact, that there is no ksuba payment prior to nisuin, but our Mishnah's not going like that, okay? So it must be a case, for example, where he stipulated that she'd get the payment before nisuin. Now, the Mishnah says inside. It says, Hayu ba mumen. It turns out that she gets a mum, va'oda bevesa via, and she's still in her father's house, meaning nisuin hasn't happened yet, but erison has happened. So, again, the tug of war is Ha'av Tsarch Lahavi Rayasha Mishinist Arsa Noldu Ba Mumin Halalu. The burden of proof will be on the father to show, to prove that these blemishes, these, whatever they are, deformities or other, you know, developments occurred after the erusin, after that she, the first step of marriage, she accepted the kedushin, and therefore, v'nestacha fasadehu, and therefore he's the loser. The husband is the loser. He bought something, so to speak, that later on got ruined, just like if you buy a field, and afterwards it gets flooded and ruined, so the purchaser can't go back to the seller and say, I want to give it back to you. No, you bought it, now it's your field, and you incur liability if something goes wrong. Similarly over here, that's metaphorical. The groom, chasen, took the kala of the bride and did kedushin with her, and then after that, something went wrong, her voice changed, her body odor changed, whatever the story is. And so now the father's saying, okay, you want a divorce, that's your prerogative, but pay me the ksuva. So then the burden of proof is on him, the father, says the Mishnah. However, once she moves into her husband's domain, meaning nisuin happens, so she now moves in with him, then the burden of proof shifts now to the husband. The husband now, if he wants to get away without paying the ksuba, remember, he can divorce her according to Mishnah law whenever he wants. No one's stopping him from divorcing her. But if he wants to get away without paying the ksuba, he'll have to bring proof that he was misled, the thing had developed previously, and therefore, v'haya mikcho mikach tos, and therefore, the kinyan he made, the acquisition he made in giving his wife that ring way back when, at acquisition time, was made under false pretenses, and therefore shouldn't be binding, and therefore he shouldn't have to pay the ksuva. Now, all that's divr of meir. That's your meir shita. You'll see the machlokas isn't very big. We'll see in a moment. Chacham orm, the chacham say, and actually this next sentence is not really actually a machlokas. B'med devar memorim, when is it a case where the husband can make a claim that it was mekachtos in the first place? That's only b'mumin shebeseser, blemishes that are not open to someone who looks at the girl. But if we're talking about a girl who's missing an arm or whatever, extra finger, or has a, you know, a gigantic hairy mole on the tip of her nose or something, so then how could the husband possibly say he didn't know about it? Of course he knew about it, right? Of b'mumin shebegali, any blemish that is open for anyone who looks to see, enu yechol litom. Then there's no possibility of the husband making such a claim. Now that'll be true even if, let's say, he never saw her before. That doesn't matter really, you know. Or let's say, you know, when she came, you know, I don't know what, she was wearing a long dress and he couldn't see she was, you know, so severely bow-legged, or she only had one leg or something. That's no, because everyone can see from this girl from other scenarios in the town that she is got one leg or something. And therefore he'd hear about it, okay? But there are certain of these blemishes which she could conceal, and people just wouldn't know about it necessarily because, you know, whatever, it's under her toga, whatever she's wearing. But now, says the Mishnah further, and this is the sheet of the Chacham that Reb Meir disagrees with. Vim yesh merchatz ba'os ha'ir, if there is a public bathhouse in that city, meaning that everyone goes to public bathhouses to wash from time to time, and in such a place, the women undress for other women. So then, af mumin shebeseiser niyachol liton. Then, said the chachamim, the husband can't even claim he didn't know about the kind of mum that would that was hidden from the eye. Bibnei shehu bodka b'krivosav, because he would have investigated her through his relatives, meaning he would ask his sister or his mother or his niece or something to check out the girl to make sure that she was of a sound body, and would come out that, you know, she has six fingers or whatever the, you know, her, whatever it is. Now, the Reb Meir disagrees on that point. Reb Meir says, listen, even if there is a merchatz, a public bathhouse, so, you know, the girl wants to conceal the fact she has whatever she has wrong with her, so she'll be very careful to not go when anyone's looking, or to keep it covered, you know, or maybe just, you know, maybe the husband doesn't get a chance to get his niece to go and investigate, who knows. The point is, that's not good enough, says Reb Meir. The halacha is, however, that, like the Chachamim, that if we can presume that he would have known of all of these things, if it's reasonable to assume he could know about them, and therefore he can't make such a claim. Now, the exact technicalities about what will be included in that sort of depends on the time and place and what's normal, how people dress in public and private, and how people behave themselves in public and private bathhouses, all that kind of stuff. So therefore, you know, the halacha is like the chachamim. To whatever extent it is halacha l'maisa, I'm not exactly sure.